This is shameful.
Russia's Ukraine invasion intensifies. It's Friday, March 4th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, calls for immigration relief. Uyghur refugees share survival stories. Helping Afghan refugees. Massive Australia flooding. Museum controversy. It's all on today's VOA Asia. More than 1 week into the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russian forces continue their push despite condemnation from the United Nations General Assembly, which voted overwhelmingly to reprimand Russia for invading Ukraine. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
Russian shelling hammering Ukraine, with reports the southern city of Kherson has fallen to the Russian military. Thousands of civilians killed or wounded since the invasion began, Ukrainian authorities say. Babies like this one in Kyiv, born in the cellars of hospitals, as Ukrainians in cities across the country are forced underground.
Sheltering wherever they can, including children receiving cancer treatment, who are now living in the basements of Ukraine's children's hospitals, with doctors and nurses doing their best to care for them as explosions boom overhead. This is shameful.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced further sanctions on Russian businesses, this time on 22 defense-related entities that make the combat weapons used to attack the Ukrainian people. A ban on Russian aircraft entering American airspace now in place, with Belarus also sanctioned for its role in enabling the Russian invasion. Near Kyiv, U.S. officials say a convoy of Russian military vehicles more than 60 kilometers long has stalled due to fuel and food shortages and resistance from Ukrainians. Linda Thomas Greenfield is the U.S. ambassador to the U.N.
To the Russian soldiers sent to the front lines of an unjust, unnecessary war, I say your leaders are lying to you. Do not commit war crimes. Do everything you can to put down your weapons and leave Ukraine.
The Pentagon Thursday slammed Russian President Vladimir Putin's order earlier this week to place his nuclear forces on increased alert. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby.
Such provocative rhetoric and possible changes to nuclear posture involving the most consequential weapons in our respective arsenals is unacceptable. The United States has not taken any similar steps.
Kirby announced that the Pentagon would postpone a scheduled intercontinental ballistic missile test this week as a sign the U.S. would not engage in nuclear behavior that could be misunderstood.
We did not take this decision lightly, but instead to demonstrate that we are a responsible nuclear power.
The U.S. continues to send assistance to Ukrainian forces while warning that Russian fighters will learn from their initial failures. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Western Australia finally opens border after COVID-19 closure. North Korea kept Ukraine invasion secret to all except ruling party members. Hong Kong DJ convicted of sedition in watershed trial. U.S. to invite non-political Myanmar representative to ASEAN summit. China positions itself as mediator between Russia and Ukraine. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Friday. While the United States joins its allies in sanctioning Russian President Vladimir Putin and his top officials for the war in Ukraine, humanitarian advocates in the U.S. are urging the Biden administration to give immigration relief to Ukrainians present on American soil. VOA's immigration reporter Alina Barros has this report.
Second-year college student Andrew Yuminsky is still in a state of disbelief about Russia's attack on his homeland.
It is still quite shocking to see your own country being invaded.
Yuminsky is a Ukrainian student studying in the U.S. on a temporary student visa. The college sophomore says he's following immigration guidelines to continue his studies, but wants to return to Ukraine.
I do intend to go back to Ukraine no matter the outcome.
Like Yuminsky, many Ukrainians face uncertainty about when they can return home and how long they can stay in America. Immigration lawyers and advocacy organizations are pushing for the U.S. to shield Ukrainians from deportation by providing a type of humanitarian relief known as temporary protected status.
And that is a designation that the Secretary of Homeland Security can make for an entire country, a blanket protection for nationals if there are conditions in a country that make safe return impossible, including armed conflict and other extraordinary and temporary conditions, which we are seeing in Ukraine right now and continuing to unfold.
Ukrainian student Roman Kurol is studying at the California Institute of Technology and also holds a temporary student visa. With Ukraine's future uncertain, he and his family are looking for options.
I would be very happy to keep going back home any chance I have. And I was thinking of coming back there after I finished my degree. But at the moment, the situation is so severe that, you know, there are no flights to Ukraine.
Congress established Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, in 1990.
And what Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, does is it provides protection for nationals that are here in the United States for the length of the designation, which can be up to 18 months. And it also can provide work permits for people if they choose to apply for that.
Currently, this authority rests with the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. The department told VOA that officials are monitoring the situation in Ukraine, but declined further comment. According to U.S. Census figures, there are about 105,000 Ukrainian non-citizens in America, and about 2,000 of those are international students who could benefit from TPS or some protected status.
I would really prefer to go back to the independent and sovereign Ukraine with all its territories reclaimed, and I'll do my best to help it.
But for now, Yuminsky and other Ukrainians remain in America, uncertain about their fate and the future of their homeland. Alini Barros, VOA News, Washington.
Still to come on VOA Asia, hear from Uyghur survivors who fled from China to the U.S. Happening now in Asia, at least 5 people are dead due to flooding from 2 days of torrential rain on Indonesia's main island of Java. And the city of Serang was seen submerged from aerial observation Thursday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. What is happening inside Chinese facilities that Beijing calls vocational education and training centers? Reports from those who were confined in these detention camps and drone footage help paint a picture of life behind those walls. Survivors say Uyghurs and other religious and ethnic minorities in China are being persecuted for their religion. For VOA, Sanjar Hamidov has more from survivors who fled to the U.S. Anna Rice narrates the story.
This is a graphic novella that tells a story of genocide against Uyghur Muslims in China. It was drawn by 33-year-old Uyghur Mihrigul Tursun, based on her 2015 experience in a Chinese camp. The novella was published on the Share American website, a U.S. State Department platform used to share U.S. foreign policy information around the world. Tursun says she was separated from her newborn triplets when she entered the detention camp, where she remained for the next 3 years. She says during that time, one of her children died of starvation.
My life is destroyed from 2015 to until 2018. From 2015 until 2018, I have get torture physically and the psychological torture in prison. I have electric and I witnessed 9 women die in the prison.
40-year-old Zumra Dawood spent 2 months in a detention camp. During that time, Chinese doctors used unknown medication on her. She says as a result, she and her husband can't have children.
And in these 62 days, it's 2 months, what I have experienced was several things. One of them was being forced to take medications. I don't know what medications we were taking, but they gave us medications and even checked our mouths with their fingers to make sure we swallowed what they gave us.
When she fled to the U.S., she says doctors in America told her she had undergone sterilization and could no longer have children. 60-year-old Abdullahat Noor, also Uyghur, now lives in Canada. He says he fled to Kazakhstan after Chinese authorities demanded that he pay for his third year in a camp. Chinese police tracked him down.
In Kyrgyzstan, even Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan, Chinese intelligence service coming there and researching Uyghur people and then sending police from those countries. When they come to us, they used to catch and give us to China.
British attorney Rodney Dixon represents Uyghur camp survivors in the International Criminal Court of Justice in The Hague. Dixon says Chinese security services have persecuted Uyghurs, detained them in other countries, and sent them straight to concentration camps.
In Tajikistan alone, we're talking about thousands of persons being deported or disappeared. Around 3,000 Uyghurs once lived in Tajikistan, and the numbers dropped dramatically down to approximately 100. The same is taking place in other neighboring countries.
Dozens of countries, including the U.S., have condemned Beijing for its treatment of Muslims in Xinjiang. The U.S. has also sanctioned 34 entities linked to China's armed forces and policies regarding its Uyghur minority. China has denied human rights abuses against the Uyghurs, and has said in the past the facilities are either vocational training centers or re-education facilities to combat religious extremism. Beijing has accused Washington of meddling in its domestic politics.
The so-called U.S. sanctions reveal the United States' sinister intention to control China through Xinjiang and fully expose the U.S.'s hypocritical authoritarian nature under the fake premise of democracy and its hegemonic nature and fake premise of human rights.
Experts say China's treatment of Uyghurs is rooted in Islamophobia and the desire to control the region's natural resources, including oil and gas. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights is in talks with Chinese officials on a possible trip to the Xinjiang region after the Olympics. For Sanjar Hamidov in Fairfax, Virginia, NRI's VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Philippine troops have killed at least 7 Muslim insurgents aligned with the Islamic State group in a recent offensive in southern province Lanao del Sur. They also recovered 45 heavy firearms and several bombs and landmines. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. It's a story as old as America. Immigrants who have made their home in the United States, reaching out to help those who come after them. This is the case of an Afghan-American mother and daughter in Jacksonville in the U.S. state of Florida, who are helping with the resettlement of Afghan refugees. VOA's Jela Nouri reports.
24-year-old Madiha Zahir is a corporate lawyer who, with other lawyers, is partnering with the University of California Berkeley School of Law to help Afghan families who want to flee Afghanistan and the Taliban. She began this work in August when the Taliban took over Kabul.
I helped through Berkeley Law to gather and process applications. It was taking 3 months. Lawyers and volunteers from all over the U.S. came together to help.
Zahir says bringing at-risk Afghans to the United States is now taking longer. Her mother, Shima Zahir, is also helping. She's a volunteer with Lutheran Services in Jacksonville, Florida, helping the newly arrived refugees. They are grateful for the help.
We are very happy with the Afghans who are living here. They help us. We are very grateful for all of them.
The Community Foundation, a local organization, is also helping the newly arrived Afghans find homes in the city. Zahir says the help is welcome.
They're trying to help them with employment and housing so they can stand on their feet. I think Afghans are happy, though I think it is difficult for them going through the chaos. I think it is important for those who have children because they will be able to continue with their education here.
Part of what is making this possible is millions of dollars in donations from Jacksonville residents. Those donations will help at least 400 Afghan refugees resettle in the city. For Gila Nouri in Jacksonville, Florida, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
The moon is about to get walloped by a big piece of space junk. The object, believed to be a leftover rocket, will slam into the far side of the moon Friday. Space debris expert John Krasidis.
It's a pretty decent impact, but really nothing to worry about. NASA did a mission before where they intentionally hit a rocket onto the moon and got the plume off the moon to study if there was water, and they actually did find that out. So they've done this before. This is the first unintentional one.
Experts think the space junk came from a rocket China launched in 2014, but China is dubious. It may take weeks, even months, to confirm the impact through satellite images. Making headlines in Asia, power is slowly restored to Taiwan after an outage that affected 5 million households. The National Power Company said the cause was a malfunction at a major generation plant. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. 500,000 people in eastern Australia are under evacuation orders or warnings as a wild weather system inundates parts of Sydney. At least 14 people have died and others remain unaccounted for. Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Australia is well used to nature's extremes, but these floods are extraordinary. Parts of Queensland have had almost 6 months' worth of rain in just 2 days. Government officials have described the extreme weather as a one in a 1,000-year event. Most, if not all, of the 2,100-kilometre coastline of New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, has been hit by ferocious storms with strong winds, dangerous surf and unprecedented amounts of rain. In Sydney, residents living near swollen rivers have been told to leave their homes before it's too late. In northern New South Wales, flood-hit communities are reportedly running out of food, medicine, drinking water and fuel. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet says many communities, including those near the Hawkesbury River north of Sydney, are at risk of severe flooding.
We do believe that things will get worse before they get better in our state, but we do expect, particularly in the Hawkesbury region, that the floods will be worse than they were last year.
Parts of Brisbane, the Queensland state capital, flooded again Thursday after yet more storms. Thousands of homes have been without power. State Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk is urging parents to collect their children from school.
This is a serious situation. It is extremely unstable weather conditions. And as a precaution, we would like people to collect their children when they think it is safe to go out on the roads and do so. But they are safe at school until they can come and collect them.
The clean-up bill from Eastern Australia's floods is expected to run into the billions of dollars. The Insurance Council of Australia said Thursday that more than 60,000 claims related to the disaster have been made so far. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Finally on VOA Asia, the site in Berlin where the Nazis surrendered to Soviet and Allied forces in 1945, now a museum, has become embroiled in the current war between Ukraine and invading Russian forces. Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA from the German capital.
May the 8th, 1945, victorious Allied commanders arrive at Berlin's Tempelhof Airport. The official Nazi capitulation is signed at this former military barracks in East Berlin, captured by Soviet forces. War in Europe is over. The site is preserved, sponsored by an association of German, Russian, Ukrainian and Belarusian historians, and known as the German-Russian Museum, until now. Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine last week, the director decided to fly only the Ukrainian flag at the front of the museum. The German-Russian Museum name plaque has been obscured. Museum director Jörg Moray explains, "Normally we display all four flags," he says, "Germany, Russia, Ukraine and Belarus. We see it as an important symbol that we sympathize with Ukraine. Ukraine is the victim here. She was attacked. That's the only point to make. So today we raised only one flag." The dispute goes far deeper. In World War II, Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. Nazi atrocities against the Soviets are well documented. Many of those crimes took place on what is now Ukrainian soil. The site of the Nazi capitulation became the German-Russian Museum in 1994, after the fall of the Soviet Union. Two decades later, Russia invaded Ukraine, annexing Crimea, and the museum found itself at the center of a dispute over its name. Again, Jörg Moray, he said our Ukrainian colleagues have difficulties working in a museum called the German-Russian Museum. From the German point of view, it was sufficient for quite some time to say we have a museum with Russia, but it's a bit inaccurate. Russia was taken to mean the whole of the Soviet Union. For a long time, that didn't bother anyone. For the Germans, it's very important to have a museum together with our former enemies in war. But we've learned now that it's important to distinguish between Russia, Ukraine and Belarus. On the eve of launching his latest invasion, Russia's president said it was aimed at the denazification of Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly compared Ukraine's government to the Nazis and accused them of committing genocide. Ukraine has strongly rejected such claims and points out that its president, Volodymyr Zelensky, is Jewish and has a grandfather who fought against the Nazis. Museum director Jörg Moray is outraged by Putin's language. "This is a misrepresentation," he says, "a corruption of history that I would never have expected. Perhaps we have indeed learned nothing from history. It is a history that is still contested."
Germany and Europe believed war was a part of history never to be repeated, to be remembered in museums like this. But as conflict returns to Europe, Russia is invoking the language of 20th century conflicts as its tanks roll into Ukraine. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Berlin.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. That's all the time we have for today's VOA Asia. Make sure you find us on all our social media platforms. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Enjoy the day, stay safe, and be well.